Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It is 12:56 p.m. that is Pacific Summer Time. Today is July 22nd, and when we look at the Philadelphia Semiconductors Index today, it was leading on the upside. It was up nearly 2%, and that's continuing to extend its rebound from the region of the trend mean and confirms support in the region of the upper side of the underlying range. That's pretty impressive in terms of the rebound that we've had, but it's also a confirmation that perhaps things aren't quite as bad as people have been anticipating in terms of the growth outlook. So we know for a fact that semiconductors are a lead indicator for the global economy. The fact that they're starting to perform once more, well, that is suggestive of continued demand for their products. So I think that is something to pay particular attention to. Well, the strength of the semiconductors index was instrumental in the outperformance of the NASDAQ, and that was in positive territory in here today. It continues to be really quite steady in the region of the trend mean, but perhaps more importantly than that, it didn't follow through on the downside from the weakness we saw on Friday. That was quite an abrupt decline that we saw in the last few hours of trading, and the rebound that we had today at least suggests that this is more of a pause consolidation in the region of the psychological 8,000 level rather than an outright reversal. What I also found interesting is when we look at the MSCI world that the sequence of lower rally highs has been broken. Now, it was in negative territory in here today, but not in a dynamic manner. And there is ample scope in which to consolidate. Perhaps the more important point, though, is that it has at least broken that sequence of lower rally highs that kicked in from the beginning of 2018. That doesn't necessarily mean that this broad measure is going to be the clear outperformer, but at least it is doing better. If one had to think about where are the flies in the ointment, well, the transportation index is not confirming on the upside. You still have the sequence of lower rally highs, and it did pull back rather sharply from the intra-week high last week, and it was in positive territory today, but well off the peaks of the day. I think it's perhaps worth looking at the winners and losers from the index so far this year. So, for example, Avis and Budget have been up about 55%, and then it's the railroads have been doing best. Whereas when we look at the decliners, well, it's been more of the airlines and the logistics companies have not been performing. But the fact is that the vast majority of the constituents have had positive performance, and yet the stock market chart for the transportation index really doesn't look particularly impressive, and that really does highlight just how much of an advance we had off the beginning of the year. The big confirmatory signal would be a sustained move above 11,000, and I think we're going to find out within the next 2 months exactly what's going on in terms of the industrial sector in the USA. There was a massive inventory build in the fourth quarter of last year in anticipation of the tariffs going in on the 1st of January. So it's reasonable to expect, therefore, that in the first half of this year, we wouldn't have quite the same number of exports. There wouldn't be quite the same need for transporting stuff around because there had already been a very significant inventory build. Well, we're heading now into the latter half of the year, or in fact, we're already in the latter half of the year, and most retail operations make the vast majority of their profits for the year in the last quarter. So we're at the point where industrials and retail operations should be starting to restock. If that is true, then we should then start to see the Cass Shipping Index, or Transportation Index, and some of these logistics companies starting to do better. Now, one of the unique challenges that UPS, for example, has is that it had been highly dependent on Amazon, and Amazon is trying to do its own logistics at the moment. FedEx is probably a better indicator of what's going on in terms of the wider economy, and it pulled back extraordinarily violently in the last few weeks of 2018, and it is now bouncing from that $150 area. If it can push back above the trend mean, that I think would begin to offer us some confirmatory evidence that the industrial sector, the retail sector, and the logistics sector most particularly are at significant lows. And I do think that we're going to have an answer for that at some point over the summer. Now, when we then think about, well, why is everybody worried about the slowdown in the industrial sector? It's because of the trade war with China. The stock market there was in negative territory today. They're just starting off their NASDAQ-style trading venue, STAR, and there will be an index for that in the not-so-distant future. I think it's probably about a month after they start. But the much bigger point is that the stock market is not going anywhere. Certainly over the course of the last 3 or 4 months following the rebound that we had, it has so far been able to hold the region of the trend mean. This, I think, is clearly suggestive of the intention of the Chinese authorities to continue to support the market. But they are increasing the number of trading venues, and what that suggests is that the quantity of capital available for speculative interests is going to get spread more thinly. In order to support the market, what they're probably then now going to do is change the regulations for the way that companies will have the ability to list overseas. They'll probably ban them from doing that so that they have to list at home, and that will then start to draw liquidity into China from overseas. I think that is perhaps the most likely of scenarios from this change in the trading rules for Chinese stocks. Now, in India today, the Nifty index was in negative territory. It has come down pretty much to test the region of the trend mean. The RBI has cut interest rates 3 times. They, I think, are at a point now, or at least the head of the central bank is beginning to talk about that they may wait and see just how things are going to pan out. The outlook for the non-bank lenders has been most acutely explored with Yes Bank, and the share did break below that psychological 100 rupee level 3 weeks ago. It was up another 8 in here today. That has pretty much just about countermanded the big decline that we had at least for part of last week. If it can sustain a move back above 100, well, then we'll start to be thinking about it breaking the sequence of lower rally highs. When something falls in such an abrupt manner, then the potential is that a lot of the bad news has been priced in. Then we have to really start thinking, well, is it simply that that the company is going to go bust, or has a lot of the bad news already been priced in? The fact that the RBI is taking a much more aggressive attitude towards managing the non-bank lenders, and also clearly identifying the risks that are outstanding in terms of non-performing loans. The big index is the Bombay Banks Index. That has been a lead indicator for the wider market for years. It is now pulling back towards the region of the trend mean. Now, the big question is whether it will continue to find support there. If it does, then I think that would be a vote by the market to conclude that this issue with non-performing loans can be isolated within the non-bank sector. If we get contagion, then the Bombay Banks Index will be breaking below the trend mean, and perhaps more particularly below the 30,000 level. So this is, I think, one of the more important indices to pay attention to. Meanwhile, the relative strength of the rupee has been beneficial for foreign investors. When we look, for example, at the JP Morgan India Investment Trust, it had gone all the way up to test it, or to post a new all-time high just 3 weeks ago. Now there is some consolidation of this impressive gain from the lows last year underway. I think when we think about what are the potential tailwinds for global growth, well, one of them is certainly the fact that we have central banks that are lining up to continue to impose extraordinary monetary policy. Then China is running massive fiscal deficits, so that's also certainly a beneficial term, for the simple reason that if China's economy were contracting, then that would represent an enormous headwind to global growth. The more that they're willing to stimulate, the greater the likelihood is that China's growth can be at least sustained, if not accelerated. But more importantly, that it will help to act as a source of demand for lots of importers or exporters that rely on Chinese demand. But then we also have the fact that the dollar has been particularly strong. And when we think about the assets that are sitting on the balance sheets of central banks and indeed banks all over the world, then if domestic currencies appreciate, it is obviously going to increase the value of their holdings. Well, the Asia dollar index is right in the region of the lows put in between 2016 and now, and really just a few weeks ago. It's testing the region and the trend mean around this 105 level, and if it can push up and away from here, well, then there is the potential that we're going to see that while the dollar has been really very steady against both the euro and the yen, there is, I think, scope for it to weaken against some of the emerging market currencies, and that is perhaps where there is the potential, or a trade potential to be exploited. When, for example, we think about Indonesia or Thailand or the Philippines, well, they are all back above their respective trend means. They are doing better from here. And I think that's also supportive of the view that global growth is starting to turn. But the bigger picture when we look at gold is that very steadiness that we have in the exchange rates between the dollar and the euro and the yen, that is supportive of the view that we are in a competitive devaluation environment. The fact that emerging market currencies are holding their own against these other the major trading currencies is suggestive that there is a competitive devaluation going on. The fact that gold has so far continued to hold this $1,400 area, most particularly that it's holding above the psychological $1,350 area, is supportive of the view that investors are looking for some form of a hedge. Silver in here today was up about 23 cents and has... Perhaps the more important point is that it was in positive territory at all. That was a very big downward move that we had on Friday. And the fact that so far this move has held, that the sequence of lower rally highs has been broken. And this is really rather suggestive of the fact that silver is back in a demand-dominated environment, that we're now in a similar recovery type scenario as we had back in 2016. I think that this is a different environment. Investors are starting to look at the big move in gold and beginning to look for catch-up plays. Silver has started to play catch-up, and platinum is at least firming from the $800 area. there is a sequence of higher reaction lows, incremental, but certainly evident there. Now the bigger question is whether it can continue to push on the upside. With gold and silver and palladium all doing better, then I think there is a strong likelihood that platinum will also start to play catch-up. And that's particularly true the higher that palladium prices go. Platinum and palladium are interchangeable in catalytic converters, and palladium is at a multiple the price of, very close to a multiple the price of platinum. That's rather odd, considering that there was an occasion when platinum was trading at several multiples the price of palladium. So it is only a matter of time before we start to get substitution. The other, I think, point that is worth paying particular attention to is the fact that oil prices haven't really rallied. They were up almost a dollar in here today on Brent crude, but that wasn't even close to the high of the day. And against a background where Iran is boarding supertankers and taking them into custody, this is the kind of environment that both highlights the potential for geopolitical tensions to really deteriorate, but also the bigger lesson here is that the USA is now such a prolific swing producer that even these kinds of news items and the heightened geopolitical tensions have not been enough to create a dynamic move in oil. That does not mean that we can't yet have a dynamic move. It may yet happen. We could get a further deterioration in geopolitical tensions, and that would send oil prices higher. But so far, oil is relatively well contained, and it's still trading below the trend mean. This looks like a process of right-hand extension following the Type 2 top formation on that very shorter-term chart. Well, that suggests that it's more likely the price is going to go lower than 60 rather than above 67. But that is obviously to ignore the geopolitical tension and the potential that we could have a more taut environment. So obviously, if oil prices were to surge higher, then they act as a tax on growth. And that really would put paid to the outlook for a reflationary environment. So I think oil is most particularly worth monitoring because it has not responded. Eventually, we are going to see a break from this short-term range, and the direction in which it goes is going to give us a lot of information about what we can expect from the global economy. The lower that commodity prices are, that fulfills a dual purpose. The continuous commodity index, for example, has held a sequence of lower rally highs over the course of the last year, and it is struggling to push back above the 400-point level right now. Well, that is not representing a headwind in terms of global growth because of the fact that lower commodity prices should help economic growth internationally. But on the other hand, it is representative of the slowdown in growth and the lack of demand for commodities. Of course, that is backward-looking, whereas the lower prices go, the greater the likelihood is that demand will pick up. That's simply economics 101. That is the more forward-looking way of thinking about it, that the lower prices are, the greater the likelihood is that economic growth will pick up enough to boost demand. And that, I think, is also supportive of the view that we're potentially at the trough in global growth, but it hasn't yet been confirmed. Then when we think about the bond markets, well, one of the supporting points for the global economy is that central banks are willing to engage in extraordinary monetary policy as well as extraordinary fiscal policy. And the 10-year Treasury yield is around 2.4%. So far, the rally that we've had in the yield over the course of this month so far has been pretty modest, compared with counter trend rallies we've seen during this entire decline over the course of the last 8 or 9 months. There is a wide overextension relative to the trend mean, so that is holding out the prospect that we may get some additional advance here, but I rather think it's unlikely. In order to get a significant move on the upside in terms of the yield, well, investors would have to be bitterly disappointed with the outlook for interest rates, or there would have to be a very significant inflationary fear. But that just does not seem apparent in the short term. In the meantime, the Federal Reserve is at least going to cut by 25 basis points in just 10 days' time, or 9 days' time. They're going to stop reducing the size of the balance sheet in September, and that is likely to act as a contractionary event in terms of yields. I continue to think that it is more likely than not we're going to see a test of the lower side of the range, and the lower side of the range is around 1.5%. So I think that's still out there in the future. What it also suggests is that there is a drive to capture yield going on. And the fact that we have that is, I think, one of the contributing factors in the compression in yields, the compression in the high yield spreads, and the outperformance of bonds generally. When we eventually do get a recession, well, it may not be for a while. We're in the second half of the 3rd year of the US presidential cycle. There is the potential that we're going to get a bubble first and a crash afterwards. The very fact that the Federal Reserve has moved from being data dependent to trying to predict data, then that is suggestive that they are willing to tolerate bubble risk in preference to a recession. Well, that is, I think, also confirming evidence that the Federal Reserve is a serial bubble blower, and there is the potential that that's where we are starting off from, that we're at the beginning of the bubble phase. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.